Today is May 2nd, and we are continuing with the Rav's Torah regarding Sfiras HaOmer and Shavuos. Okay. So, the Rav's comportment was very humble. I was just reading this story in a paper called Talalei Oros. The Rav's grandfather, Chaim Brisker, sort of Moshe Soloveitchik's father, right? Moshe had a brother who was, he was known as the Brisker Rav, that was Rav Velvel Soloveitchik. Rav Moshe came here and taught at Yeshiva University, so he sort of, you know, that was the end of, you know, his title as it might have been the Brisker Rav. So his son was Rav Yosher Ger Soloveitchik, and so Yosheber, at the top of our course, his grandfather Rav Chaim Brisker. Okay, when you hear the other Rav Chaim, it's Chaim Balashner, student of the Vilna Gaon. Right. So Rav Chaim Brisker was visited by. This is going to sound like a joke, by the Chavetz Chaim. Right. And the Rosh Dayan, the head of the Beis Din of Brisk, was there at the meeting. Okay.
I believe his name was Riegler. Shlomo Riegler.
Anyway, so the Av Beis Din, Chaim Brisker, the Rav of the town, and the Chofetz Chaim were in the room together. Okay. And when it came time to leave, or it came time they were going someplace, and they actually got into a little fight over who gets to walk out first, or who gets to go first. Right? I don't know if you know enough to figure it out, but after they were looking at Lumbus, what in Lumbus can determine who goes first, who goes second, who goes third? And maybe the fact that it's a Dvar Torah and Parshas Emor, it should help you figure it out. What they ended up doing, the argument was that Rav Chaim Brisker should go first because he is the Rosh Eder. He is the head of the community. He's like the chief rabbi, if you will. So he's like the Rosh Yeshiva, right? And Rav Chaim was saying that one of the others, each one was saying one of the other two should go first. Rav Chaim says, I'm just a visitor here. I'm visiting you. And he said, well, that's what we want to make you go first, because you maybe want to machabe you. And Rav Chaim and the Rosh Beis Din was saying, each one was saying someone else should go. Okay. In the end, the order was Chofetz Chaim first, Chaim Brisker second, the Av Beis Din third. What's the basis of the order?
Age.
You have to know, no, Chofetz Chaim was the youngest here.
Backwards.
That's Parshas Emor. Chofetz Chaim is a Kohen. Soloveitchik comes from a famous line of Rabbim. Okay. And he was Yisrael. Okay, I believe he's still the president of Yale. His name is Soloway. Are you familiar? Soloway. He's also from the same line. Okay. Usually, if you're a Levi, the fact that you're a Levi was put into your name. Okay, Levine, very famous Levite name. Of course, the Levi by itself, right? Levi or Leva, L-E-V-Y. So you see here. Soloveitchik, so Levi. Okay, so. Now, on this, my segue is that perhaps the most famous, most common Levite name is, anyone with this name is almost surely a Levite. Not a Kohen, but a Levite. Siegel. Siegel Berg, Segel. Right?
Why did that become a Levite name?
So this relates to what I want to do with you here. This is what the Rav discusses on Shavuos. is the fact that at Matan Torah, Hashem told us that we would be an Am Segula. Atem Tiyuli, it says Mamleches Kohanim, the Goy Kadosh, Kili, because you are to me, Segula Mikol Ha'amim. So the Rav said something that's it's obvious. What the Shevet Levi is to the rest of Israel, got it? The whole nation of Israel is to
rest of the world.
Now go figure that out. Okay? Simple syllogism. What Levi, Shevet Levi, means Kohanim and Levi. Why Siegel became a Levi name and not a Kohen name? It's almost exclusively a Levi name. Right? I'll tell you this. I know lots of Kohanim who are not Kohanim. But I don't know a single, I know lots of Siegels. All of you. Simple halacha. I've explained that. Excuse the tangent. Bad behavior gets you to lose your kahuna. Bad behavior does not get you to lose your Levi status. The lady who marries the divorcee, the children still the baby. Kohen can marry all sorts of people, but the children are no longer Kohanim. Okay? A lady is not forbidden to marry a Grusha. But, you know what I'm saying? So, a Levi that marries someone he shouldn't marry, the children can still possibly be right? But a Kohen, you lose your kahuna for that. Okay? So the name Siegel gets passed down for people. The name Cohen, if you're not a Cohen and your last name is Cohen, it means someone like your great-great-grandfather married someone and he shouldn't be. Or maybe someone changed his name when they came to Ellis Island. I don't know. Good. Right, you got it. Okay, so what the Rav said was that Shevet Levi to the rest of Klal Yisrael is the same as Klal Yisrael to the Umos nations. Okay. You got it? I see it here. I'm Lechas Kohanim. Kodosh. Right? You're an entire nation of Kohanim. Are my segula. School is usually translated as a treasure. Right? Segula, I think when people, like they're doing something, having an operation, they want a segula. Right? They want what's a segula? Usually they say giving tzedakah is a segula. The couple is going through fertility therapy. What's a good segula to assure that this will work? Go to the best doctors. Treatment, be healthy, do what they tell you to do. Don't smoke while you're doing this. Don't drink heavily while you're doing the treatment. Well, you know, those are obviously the best schoolers. But the sometimes they want to, you know, there's a schooler that to read the story of Chana right before the treatment, or there's a schooler to give extra tzedakah to an orphanage, or to help crib or a time. Just one life. You know, these organizations that help other people give birth. So these are segulas, right? Rav was a brisker doesn't go in for these things, but they acknowledged even as intellectual as they were, they acknowledged the power of the mindset. Because they know that the Gemara allows, and the Rambam does too, carrying, get this, I'll explain what this word means, a Kriya Baduk, get it? A Kriya Baduk in the Rishus HaRabim, in your hand, on Shabbos. What is a Kriya Baduk? This could be the tooth of a fox, it could be the foot of a rabbit, Rashi discusses both of these in the end of the sixth parable of Masechet Shabbos as possible kmiya baduks for certain particular ailments. Discusses that. The Gemara discusses. So what happened is that you have the same ailment that I have. You carry this kmiya. Kmiya is usually it's called an amulet in English. It could be. I have experienced one time in my life with amulets. I'll tell you the story quickly. And you carried it. You were somehow cured after carrying it. I'm aware of it. You told me the whole story. I have the same ailment. So now I'm going to carry this because this is now be a buttock. Now the Rambam knows that there's no way to get cured from this. It's illogical. It doesn't get into the Rambam's writings. He speaks against this kind of thing in the Marn book. The best kmiya for you is go to a good doctor and follow their advice. Right? And be a good person to gain God's mercies. But, from my standpoint, if I believe that this helped you get better, and then I carry it with violate Shabbos, Doraisa, and carry it with my hand, not sewn into my jacket, which might be like a shinu. I can carry it in my hand, in the Rishon Rabbah, come on Shabbos, because it's before Nefesh. Obviously, it depends on what the Kamiya Baduk is being carried for. You can't carry a Kamiya Baduk on Shabbos because of your corns on your feet. Right? But you can carry a Kamiya Baduk if someone was just diagnosed with late-stage cancer, and they're having an experimental treatment that they hope might work. Right? Carry his kmiya and keep it in mind, and it's a kodesh baruch hu, it's a final arbiter, but this will help because it helped you, so it's going to help me. Right? Okay, so the Rav was a good brisker is not going to go in for this kind of thing. But the Rambam, briskers are all Rambam, we learned in Rav Shir, Gemara, Rashi, straight Rambam. The Rambam was not even used as a posik in the Rav Shir. The Rambam was used as a main ingredient. Exactly, Rashi. Rav uses the Rambam like Rashi. Not only is it the Rav was so good at trying to figure out why the laws of Sfiras Omer and Hilchos Tumidim and Musafin. Right? It should be in Hilchos Pesach. Right? Like what the Shulchan Aruch puts it. Like what the Rif puts it. Like what the Rosh puts it. They discuss here somewhere at the end of the Messiah's Pesach. Right? So the Rav was very good at this. And so the Rambam knows that these kriyos are not part of the healing process. But he also knows that your frame of mind is very much part of the healing process. I'm sure you've at some point or another been exposed to studies that show that cancer patients who are in a good frame of mind have a much higher, but an appreciably higher rate of success. If a doctor tells you that you have 14% chance of conceiving, and now because of your frame of mind, now you have a 17% chance of conceiving, that doesn't really translate to a great shift, but 3% when you're starting at 14 is a huge percentage. You know what I'm saying? That's more than 20% of a boost. I'll take that. Right? Just studies that show this. There's a raging discussion whether frame of mind has anything to do with fertility at all. I'm just saying is that Rambam is aware of the emotional aspect, and even the greatest briskers are aware of that very much too. Okay. So I told you I would tell you that the one time I ever went for a kmiya for someone is I just had come to my first shul. I can tell you exactly when it was because my wife was very much pregnant with our second child, who was born a day or two after this, what I'm about to describe. And I went to, at the behest of the person who was in my shul. So if Chani wasn't born yet, it means I'm in my shul just a matter of weeks. I just had come to my first shul on West 84th Street, and the year is 1985. It's late September 1985. I went to Borough Park to buy up a lot of rooms and estates to get them very cheap so that I can make sure that my Balabatim, because they charge too much in the West, I think that you can buy it cheap. So I bought like 20, 25 weeks now, so to bring back home. And I was asked to go to a Hasidic Rebbe for someone in my shul. He was a Bal Kriya, and his brother was such a misdiagnosis, but he died shortly after the story I'm telling you. They gave him a hernia operation. They took out half his stomach. They couldn't figure out what was killing him. In the end, it was very late stage stomach cancer. And he asked me to go to this rabbi. I remember his last name, he was like Portugal. He was known as the Scholier Rebbe. And he asked me to get a kniya to sew into his brother's jacket. And I went with my wife. We weren't there anyway, so we went up with Rebbetzin. We read this rabbi Rebbetzin. He asked me certain questions before we went in. And I didn't go with this one, but he saw me to get together these. He gave me three little tiny pieces of parchment, folded up, and he said, tell him to sew it into his jacket in three different places. And then we'll see what happens. At the same time, the Rebbetzin was telling my wife that you look like you're pretty about to part. How about if you also get a bracha from your Rebbe? So she said, why not? Same price, right? So she kind of said, well, I thought a nice bracha would be this child should be with low life, this child should be racial money, this child. He just said one simple line. I was there. He said, you should have an easy delivery. Show me. Goodbye. Very disappointed about that. And while he went to a side room to contemplate both times before giving me the kliya, before giving my wife the bracha. And while he was away, I did something very good for me. I opened up the two kliyas. I started looking, what is he writing there? And I thought, is it that line? So I was able to look at two of them. I never got to see the third because he came back in. But he wrote the word Shabbos on one. He wrote the word Shin Dalet Yud on the second, and I never got to see the third. Maybe some kind of three-letter word that could be Shin, I don't know. But he just said, you should have an easy delivery. Goodbye. And I went back home, and I gave 3 meters to this man who died a few weeks later. And my wife gave birth. This was Motzei Yom Kippur, 11th of Tishrei. The next day, you can go Google this date in the calendar in New York City. September 27th, 1985, was the last hurricane that came to New York.
The last hurricane that came to New York was Sandy.
No, this was much worse than Sandy. Sandy did really just the problem with Sandy is that there was a surge of water that did all the damage. But this was known as Hurricane Gloria, I think it was. And it didn't do nearly the damage Sandy did because it wasn't a surge. Sandy just happened to coincide with high tide. That's what Sandy did all the time. Okay? So she was born the next day in a half hour. So I'm one for one in Rebbe's brothers. One time I went to a Rebbe, and one time I got a Kriya. Rav Soloveitchik admitted that Kriya's, that the segula of a Kriya can be effective. He has to say that. Why?
The Gemara does.
Because?
The Gemara.
Gemara says it. It's a Mishnah. You can go against the Mishnah. Right? Okay, man. All right, what about the Gemaras that tell you, let's say, Shabbos Daf Kuf Tes, the Gemaras in Gittin, the Gemaras in Erevin that tell you certain things you should do for sicknesses? You will not get better from those things. Right? The Rav is very much aware, and this is, but this is not his kush. You keep it as a tshuva. You're not allowed to do the Gemara's cures.
Because they don't work anymore. You could say they used to work at the time of the Gemara. That was the medicine at the time of the Gemara. Don't do that today.
You don't look at what people were doing for medicine 2,000 years ago to cure ailments today. Right? That was the best thing they had at the time of the Gemara. People are different. Bodies are different. Okay?
Right? So, but what about the Kamiyas?
Hey,
frame of mind about how to get yourself better when you have a very life-threatening situation does not change.
Okay. So let's get now. This is all tangent to the word segula and segel, and because the Rav himself was a Levi, and he understood that vatem tili mamlechas kohenim b'goy kadosh makes you the chosen nation. Right. The Rav lived through the Holocaust. Right? Is this what happens to a chosen nation? Rav was melancholic at times. I told you personally, he lost so many family members within a very short window. Right? Huh? When you're a member of a famous family, you know, every uncle in the world is famous. Your father's famous. Your grandfather's famous. Your brother is famous. Everyone is famous. And you lose so many people close to you at the same time. Look, you know, they're just so. You could be like Aaron and say, "Listen, I'm the same as." And deep down, maybe the Rav philosophically looked at it that way, right? But this did affect him. It's the late 60s, mid to late 60s. The Rav lost just six or seven people very dear to him. And one on top of the other was very, very difficult for him. Okay, so what does Segula have to do with Shavuos? It's very simple. And I think if you were in a shul that laid this past Shabbos, the Haftorah of Amos, a different minhagim in different shuls. Some read from Yecheskel this past Shabbos. My shul we read from Amos. Amos is really the Navi of Tanakh. Look, listen to this pasuk, Perek Gimel. Rak eschem yodati mikol mishpachos ha'adama. I only know you from all of the families of the world. Al kein efkod aleichem es kol avonoseichem. Therefore, I hold you to a higher standard. Okay. That was so crucial to the Rav's idea of what an Am Segula is supposed to be. Right? He was acutely aware of the mid to late 60s where the Rav was really in his great prime. Right? Why you in just a few years was going to run into some very serious financial problems. Right? And the school really had to make some quick decisions. I won't get into the politics of it. The Rav thought that taking money from the government was not necessarily the best idea, but it is what saved this institution from maybe going belly up. So, and we may be still dealing with the ramifications of such a thing. But there were presidents, and you ask advice from the Rosh Yeshiva, but in the end, there are politics involved. So the Rav was very keenly aware of the need to maintain the humility of Am Segula, especially given the recent history. If you're looking at the 60s, the Rav was very much against originally some of the cavalier approaches that some Jews in Israel were taking in the wake of the Six-Day War, right? The Rav very forcefully came out saying, if I thought that it would save Jewish lives, I would say the halacha is you have to give up. He didn't say give back. Give up the kotel, give up look, the fact is that Israel was ready to sit down at the table. The very, very famous three no's of Khartoum. Right, no recognition, no talks, no peace. The Rav favored such a thing. We have to sit down at the table with them and get some more, get some normalcy, normaliut, and some recognition from the Arab world to see, to show that, you know, we took over the Har HaBayis, the holiest place for us, and we're ready to give it up to you as in the interest of peace. Right? The problem is, I must say, I haven't judged things like this, but that's a naive position. They don't ever look at it that way. I know, but they if you talk to them, what does it mean that the Israelis gave up Har HaBayis to us? Their explanation is because they know that that's a spot that's holy for Islam, but not for Judaism. That's why they give it up.
Who's that?
I've had this conversation with Islam and Islamic religious leaders. They say, you know, there was never a temple of Solomon in the Temple, because if there was, you would have given it up.
Well, didn't you?
I just wanted the wrong would answer. No, it's not necessary. Different values. We value life more than we value things. Right? Har HaBayis is a thing. Kotel is a thing. The Mishkan is a thing. Right? The Rav cited actually a medrash on this in the Gemara that says that we lighten up the minhagim of Tisha B'Av as the day wears on. Right? Sound familiar? The Minhag of Tisha B'Av lighten up as the day wears on, even though the Gemara says that the Beis HaMikdash was actually destroyed at the end of Tisha B'Av. Mostly burnt on the 10th of Av. You hear? So really, we should go more chumra as Tisha B'Av goes on. Just like we go more chumra from the Shiva Sabbat Tammuz, then the 9 days, then Shavuot Shechavot, then Erev Tisha B'Av, the night of Tisha B'Av. It should go more and more machmir till the end, where we're maybe putting ashes on our heads and standing to... No, at Chatzos, just when the Gemara says where the destruction started to happen, right, until then they were just pillaging, they're actually destroying the physical place called the Beis HaMikdash. Now we're putting on film, now we're sitting on chairs, now we're putting back the velvet, now we're opening up the lights fully, right? I'm not eating and drinking yet, but the reason for this is because the Gemara says that now that the Beis HaMikdash is burning, the anger of God is waxing against things, and therefore waxing less against people. Did you hear such a message? Such a mark? Okay? Sound familiar? Okay? So the Rav felt that that was not just a hunky-dory, fanciful philosophy. This is what he felt was guiding. The guiding principle of what we should be doing in the way this is how an Am Segula behaves. Okay, you with me? Right? We behave using Torah values. The Am Segula description comes to Dafka as we are receiving the Torah. Okay, yes?
Can I remember we discussed this a while ago, I don't remember the context, but can I ask exactly which Midrash slash Gemara this is? Like, look at it after.
Yes, so the Gemara here in the Masechet Tannis that points to a contradiction in Tanakh as to the day the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. One pasuk says that it was destroyed on the 7th of Av, and two other pasukim say that it was destroyed on the 10th of Av. So the Gemara, the 9th of Av is not a date in Tanakh. And it's not a specific date in Tanakh. So Gemara says, how do you reconcile this? And why are we fasting on the 9th? So Gemara says, they broke through the walls of Yerushalayim on the 17th of Tammuz, or the 9th of Tammuz, according to the Bavli. They pillaged and they ransacked through and through for a few weeks until they made it up to Har HaBayis on the 7th of Av. They pillaged and removed everything of value for 2 days until the 9th. Broke into the actual Beis HaMikdash and again scraped off any gold they could find and took in whatever value was left. Babylonians had done that 11 years earlier, in 597 to some extent. And they took everything of value out, and then when there was nothing of value left, they put it to the torch at the end of the 9th and it burnt on the 10th. So the Gemara says, so maybe we should fast on the 10th, right? The discussion actually originates with an exposition of Tehillim chapter 79 that says, Mizmor LeDavid, Bevo'o, when the enemy came, and it starts off with the words, Mizmor LeDavid. So Gemara says, Mizmor LeDavid, Kina LeDavid Mibayale. Who's singing songs about the destruction of the temple? So Gemara says, because with the destruction of the temple came something more important, the saving of human life. The Muslim considers, I mean, we have to sacrifice our life for that. Now, we also feel we should read this book, who's ready to sacrifice life. It's important to Islam. So are we ready to sacrifice our life for Harabais? Don't we sacrifice our life when we go to war for things? Why do we go to war? To maintain our way of life, to make for our land. So the Rav says, okay, maybe when a prophet comes and tells us, no, we don't have prophets. So the army has to decide. Because I'm not in that decision making. I'm not a soldier. Right? I don't know the strategies, but if the soldier says, if Moshe Dayan Paskins, that it's better for the future of Israel to give up Har HaBayis, then that's what we should do. Okay? We only find out now that the Muslims up there were expecting us to banish them, to kick them out. That's what they would do with their own people. Right? So, that's not here nor there. Rav would be considered a pacifist by today's standards. His brother, Achrav Aharon, was very different. He was much more... I think this may have come up when we talked about Rav and modern state of Israel. Okay. All right. So, be careful. Am Segula can only be determined by Torah principles. What I heard in the name of Rav Aharon is that the people who are experts who get to decide whether we keep Har HaBayis or not should not just be experts in military campaigns, in military occupations, in military situations. They should also be experts in how special Yerushalayim is. Chevron or anything like that.
What does that mean?
So he proved this from the following. He says, when you feel you need to eat on Yom Kippur, right? If you say, I need to eat, no expert has a say on that. You eat. You got it? Now, every hungry person is going to say, I need to eat. Now, someone who wants to fast on Yom Kippur, but just feels, if I continue to fast, I'm going to get very sick. Right? Whether it is because of some underlying problem, late-stage cancer, or because of he's in the middle of some kind of treatment or something of that sort. Right? Got it? Okay? The Briskers were very famous for being very lenient on Yom Kippur. Not being lenient on Yom Kippur, being machmir on Yochos Pikuach Nefesh. Right? Here. So, but here is the question. A person is, let's say, deathly ill. And they're asking doctors, what should be done with my situation? Tell me what I'm supposed to eat. And every doctor says, you can fast. I know how important it is to you. You can fast, you can be fine. Maybe doctors won't say that because they're afraid of a lawsuit or something, I don't know. But every doctor in the world is going to tell a pregnant woman, you should eat. Don't go 25 hours without eating. Right? Remember I told you a story? That girl was born in a half hour. We left the house 3 o'clock, September 27th, Shabbos was starting at about 6. 3 o'clock, when we left the house to go to the hospital, on a Friday afternoon, I was home plenty of time before Shabbos. It was born about 4, and I had Shul. We had other kids. My mother-in-law, by the way, is having surgery right now. Her name is Rachel Bela Bas Chaya Esther Feger. She should have her 4. My mother-in-law came over to watch the others.
I heard the name of her.
This baby, by the way, who was born that day, the day of Hurricane Gloria, we did not name her Gloria. She lives in Israel now, and she has 8 kids of her own. Her name is Rachel Bela Bas Chaya Esther Feger. So she came up to watch the other kids, and I was home in time for Shabbos. I thought I was going to have to, you know, walk home. The hospital is 14th Street, and I live on 84th Street. So she fasted the day before, the full fast. I said, you know, that's all people listen to. You're 9 months pregnant. You know, you have a... There's no one out there. She fasted. Fasting 25 hours brings a lot of contractions. And the child was not good for another month. That's why she was pretty small. And she came out fine. So that's it. The baby was born in the half hour. And the Rebbe's bracha was 100% true. Very easy to live. Okay, yes?
I don't know how I got here, but how does one become an expert in knowing how special Rishon is?
Because you say Rishon, you have a Rahman Tashuv, with Kavan, and you die.
Okay, how does that make one?
You say, Rishon, your name is Shukho, Tzio, Rahman. This is the point. When you ask a doctor, should I take your name giver? Every doctor in the world is going to say, of course you should eat, you're sick. He has to be a bucky not only in medicine, but he has to also be a bucky in the laws of Yom Kippur. In other words, he has to appreciate how important Yom Kippur is for us.
How do you determine someone is bucky in Yerushalayim?
The bucky in Yerushalayim strategic necessity for the Jewish people is let the soldiers, let the generals discuss that, let the spies and then everybody, and maybe even politicians. But it should be done in concert. This is the Rav's tradition, that it should be done in concert with people, with a sentiment at least. Because everyone in the world will say, what's the difference? I'll give up Harabayis with the Kotel. Is no more important than giving up this little piece of land right here. We'll swap. Right? Because it's important to you, but it's not important to me because life is important to me. No, it should be someone who has the sense of how important this is for us.
Kedusha Samakom.
Yeah, because Kedusha Samakom. Am Segula also has holy places and holy time. Right? You get it now? He used the example of eating on Yom Kippur. Every military expert will say, give up any land that might lead to peace. But this is something special. Every doctor is going to say, eat on Yom Kippur. He has to know what Yom Kippur means to us. You following me?
Yes. You tell a story earlier in the semester, last semester, something about the Rav made Kiddush on Yom Kippur?
Rav was Rabbi Yisrael Salanter in 1836. He got up to the Bima. There was a terrible cholera attack going on. People were dying every day. Got up to the Bima. A different way I heard the story, and I just read it in this Sefer, Talalei Oros, because I never read it. It's an interesting parsha because the Emor mentions in Kippur. And what he did was he took a kiddush cup and a piece of cake. Not just kiddush, he took a piece of cake. On Yom Kippur morning, he said some psukim about Yom Kippur. He said prayer per guffin, drank the whole cup down, and then this is in shul on Yom Kippur morning, and ate a piece of cake, made regular zonos, and sat there, made a bracha chron.
So what was the reason for
it? And he said, Yom Kippur Yom HaZeh. Right? Because people were dying from this cholera outbreak, and wanted to show people, that you need to eat today.
So to get other people also eat.
Go home and then make kiddush, and then come back after a break. And I want everybody to need your strength to defeat this cholera outbreak.
I remember saying the same thing. Blood is not around now. Rob didn't experience the pandemic, but. I remember right after the pandemic was really, really crazy. People were like, a lot of people dying originally, people in Italy, and people here and there, right? Just being in Westchester, and people were getting very sick. And the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael was saying that we should establish a fast day, that this pandemic should not affect us. And I remember thinking that this is exactly not what we need.
the virus gets into a person, he needs 100% of his strength to fight it. You don't want the virus getting into a body that hasn't eaten in 20 hours. It's just a daytime fast, maybe in 10 hours and 15 hours. You need your strength to fight it. Okay. Alright, there are other segulas. Right. Okay, today's presentation was regarding Shavuos, where we were told we were an Am Segula. To a brisker, that's one thing. If you're keeping your mitzvahs, right? That's right. We are the Rokeach, who was very big into schools. Rokeach said there's 300 Kohanim. Anyone here in the fold, we'll do on Sukkot is from this Rokeach. But it wasn't that they're supposed to do it in the Kotel Plaza. They didn't have the Kotel Plaza at the time. They lived in the 12th century. He said 300 Kohanim raised their hands on Harazesim, then that'll bring about the most Mashiach. So what Rav Avraham Yitzchak Kook was asked, now that we have access to Harazesim, the time Jews couldn't go to Harazesim, Christians and Muslims would never let a Jew get that close to the new shrine. Certainly not 300 of them. Ramban got his way into the old city, but there was barely a minute. Yet 300 Jews have been Christians allow Jews to look at the Kotel from a high distance and on only one day a year, Tisha B'Av, and they would cry, so they call it the Wailing Wall, because everyone was crying when they looked at it. Right? I'm sure you know the history of so in the year 12, some 12, early 13th century, the Rokeach said, get 300 Jews up there. So someone asked Rav Kook, okay, now we have access. Now the church will allow, we'll get permission, and we'll get 300 Kohanim to do this. He said, first of all, this I have a much better school up. Is that 300 Kohanim get stuck up and daven? And I'm not into schools. Plus, maybe you're okay, I didn't know this, but Harazesim is filled with, yeah? It's nice. The grave's there. It's not a place for Kohanim to go. But when we get the Kotel back, and we're allowed to go in there, you should know that if you ever see those old pictures, the Kotel Plaza was no thicker than this room. And men and women are always together in all the pictures. There were no mechitzas, there was no place to daven. You couldn't daven. It's like Har HaBayis today. There could never be in there. Muslims wouldn't, they would just let you come and touch the wall, put in some people in there. But there was no davening there. Right? Now, of course, that we control it. So now the Kohanim go there and they feel that that's, maybe we are in the Moshe Mashiach already. Okay? So again, today's discussion was on the Rav, the Levi, with the word solo ve, you see Levi in there, is that what we need most as an Am Segula is the humility that is of necessity to a people that consider themselves to be a bit special. Because look at the Yosef story. When you think that you are someone above everybody else, when you get the coat of long sleeves or stripes or colors, whatever it is, you're going to bring the enmity of everybody else. Okay? You felt that the role of the Jew is to make everybody else feel your life is better because we're here. It's not working too well. We do bring prosperity wherever we go. Think of it. But they all... I close out with a very sad commentary. Remember the Jews of Jersey City? Remember there was a shooting in a Chabad supermarket? And they interviewed people there. And he goes, yeah, the Jews keep moving in here and they make the neighborhood so good and then it's impossible to afford housing. Right? Because Jews come into bad neighborhoods and they always improve it. Right? And then it becomes too expensive to live here. That's what the Jews do. Right? As opposed to, I remember what happened to us in the Bronx, where you had these big, huge houses that you could sell for about $750 because no one couldn't sell it. Right? If you stay too long. So what can I say? We the Rav was keenly aware it's not maybe a bracha levatola to hope that they're going to start to love us because we bring them indoor plumbing. It didn't work with the Arabs. That's what Moshe Dayan felt. Give the Kotel up. If they won't accept these lands back in exchange for peace, we'll just show them their lives will get so much better because we're administering the places where they are. Yeah, the 19 years that Egypt and Jordan ruled Gaza and Yudin Shamron, there were no schools, no running water, no electricity, literacy rates were in the 30s and 40s. And when Israel took over, they built universities, they had running water, electricity, they had better lives. Didn't go that way. But the Rav never gave up hope of us fulfilling our role as the Am Segula, the same way the Levi was the Segula for his people, that we still have to be for everybody else, to be a Kiddush Hashem. Alright? Okay, so we'll close with that. And on Thursday, I'm going to have a review of what the exam will look like. Okay? And we'll review what we did this semester. And I'm going to give you a little piece of what next semester will be like in the halacha of the Rav. And we'll take it from there.